glad I never bought any.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the gala spectacular 25th episode, giant size double edition of Two Dimension Podcast, the comic book podcast with absolutely no direction.
And the crowd goes wild.
Oh, I thought that was just your chair squeaking.
Wicca,
wicca. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This is our 25th episode. We actually made it this far. I'm pretty excited. The whole crew is here, so why don't we go around and introduce ourselves?
It's Rook. How y'all doing?
Don.
Al.
And I'm Dallas Busha, your esteemed host. So, gentlemen, how's it been? It's been a little while since we've gotten together. We haven't had a show out in a little while. Sorry, everybody. Anybody done anything new or fun recently besides our crippling overtime at work?
I don't even work with you guys, and I feel your pain.
I'm telling you, hey, we got to work in the morning. We got to be up at like tomorrow. 4.
Jeez. Oh, you guys really have work in the morning?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We have to work tomorrow.
Yeah, they announced it earlier this morning. They said everybody's got to come in for work.
Oh, well, what the amazing thing is, you know, we have to work the overtime. You can either come in at 6 in the morning or you can leave at 6:30 at night. Mm-hmm. Now, Dallas and I always come in at 6 in the morning. And which really wears me out because, you know, I still do all the normal things I do during the week. Al likes to come in at 8, and I'm not talking louder, Dallas.
You are now.
But Al likes to come in at regular time and leave late. And we were planning to do the show tonight, and so Al came in, and I'm kind of amazed he came in. I even went and checked his desk this morning.
Well, it's funny because last night before we left, you're like, Al's not coming in. He's not going to make it in
early.
There's
no way.
And then I saw Al first thing this morning. I was walking in the building. I'm like, oh, my God, wait till Don sees. He's going to be so surprised.
And they walk by and they see me checking Al's desk.
You're like the widget police.
Yeah, and then I just started thinking about it. It's just, you know, when they told us we're going to have to work Saturday, oh, man, Al's not going to be real happy with us, you know.
No, I'm good, so, man.
All right, yeah, you are good. You're always good.
You were just looking for the comic books I had.
I know he's got some comics hidden in this desk somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Don, you brought some golden comics for Rook to read.
Yeah, back in one of the earlier episodes, Rook and I were talking about it. He'd never read Miracle Man, and I told him I'd bring him, and what, 25 episodes later, they're finally here.
Well, hey, maybe by episode 50, we'll all read Asterios Polyp.
There you go.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you're asking a lot there from me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, probably for me, too, to reread it. Last time I was over here, I borrowed that Alice in Sunderland book, and I brought it back today. I'm like, thanks a lot for letting me borrow it. I didn't even open it up.
Hey,
I didn't even read a page.
What? I'm not going to complain about that, okay, because all my Walking Deads are loaned out right now.
Wow.
And I'm supposed to have them back in the next 48 hours, and I'm really praying I do right now. So,
oh, man.
This is what I get for loaning books to a friend's girlfriend and then finding out they broke up.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. That's not good.
So,
well, the thing is,
gentlemen, don't lend your books.
You're a very nice guy. You're always lending out your
sucker
stuff. I've got at least one or two of your games, the PS3 games right now, sitting in my house.
You do?
Darkstalkers? Darksiders?
Darksiders.
Yeah, I've got that, which I still haven't played. But I had, for the longest time, I had a couple of your Walking Dead hardcovers a few years back.
Yeah.
I had them forever.
But this is different. This is like a friend's girlfriend. I mean, she's cool and everything. I've talked to the girl a few times. Now, I'm not real worried, like, she's going to go psycho and damage the books, because she is a collector. She is a comic book nerd. So,
woot woot.
I know that she's not going to be crazy like that and destroy my books, but it's just a matter of, okay, now they broke up, so how am I getting my books back?
Yeah, that's a strange dilemma. That's catch-22. Because you don't,
You'll get them back. Yeah, it's one thing I think is very cool. Last time I was here, Rook, and I was wanting to ask why you lent me Replicants.
Oh, Surrogates.
Surrogates. Yes.
We just can't get anything right tonight.
I can't get
you think of Blade Runner.
That's what happens. You work 70 hours a week. Anyway, but Rook mentioned it, and then before I left, Don, make sure, and I took it. Okay, I had no idea what this book was. It's fantastic.
Isn't
I
want to
thank you. I was looking at my bag. I had it in my bag all week to bring it. I guess I ended up taking it. I'll bring it back next time.
Yeah, he was showing it off to me at work, though. He's like, man, did you see this book that Rook let me borrow? It's great. And I thumbed through it.
It's a great book. And it's, oh, God, why am I not going to think of his name? Made a movie. Guy from Die Hard.
Bruce Willis?
Thank you.
Wow. Okay. Can I punch you?
Seriously, what the hell? We can't get anything.
Well, it is the 25th episode.
But no, Bruce Willis made, how far we've come. Made a movie of Surrogates.
Really?
So I haven't watched all of it, but I understand it's very good. I've been able to catch bits and pieces of it here and there as I've been, you know, doing a thousand other things. But
what was the name of the film, Surrogates?
Yep,
the
name of the film was Surrogates.
Didn't that just come out a couple years ago?
Yeah, not too long ago. My understanding actually was the book itself was written on a dare. Now, everybody, don't quote me on this. You know, if I'm wrong, don't send hate mail. Send it to Dallas.
We're always wrong on the show.
Yeah, yeah. If people actually listen to the show, Don and me would be getting a lot of.
Oh no! Yeah,
me too.
Yeah,
well,
probably.
Listen, we're all human beings. I mean, you know, nobody's perfect.
Probably so. Biff over here would be getting a lot of hate mail.
That's my alter ego. The book was actually written on a dare. The guy was a literary major, and one of his friends was like, "Well, what are you going to do with a degree as a literary major?" He's like, books, and he goes, oh, you mean comics? He goes, I'm not gonna write comics. He goes, oh, so you can't write comics? He goes, I can write a comic. I'll show you I'll write a comic.
So this was a first-time author to the medium?
Apparently it was. I mean, you know, I may be a little off. This is a story I heard from somebody, but if so, that's one hell of a way to come into comics, because it's a damn good story.
Two-dimension comics, where we don't back up our stuff by looking it up on the internet.
Well, you know, like I said, I just thought, all right, you know, I'll check it out. And once I opened it up and started reading, I couldn't stop. I'm going to buy it. Once I give the copy back to you, I'm going to get my own. And the artwork just went perfect with what the story was. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of either one of these guys, but as a matter of fact, after I read it, I broke out the sketchbook and I was drawing panels and, you know, getting this and that from it. I can't say enough about it.
It's a really interesting concept that he brings into that book. I mean, the idea of these surrogates, you never leave your house, you send your surrogate out while you're hooked up into this, you know, virtual reality world, basically.
Kind of like The Matrix?
Well, no, you have to buy a synthetic body.
Yeah, you have to buy a synthetic body.
I haven't read it.
And, you know, your synthetic goes out for you as you sit at home in this giant bed thing that, you know, you control everything with. And people basically, no one leaves their house. They all send their surrogates out. So there's never any danger of dying.
I was just going to say, if your surrogate dies, it's no big deal because it was just something.
Another one.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
But the problem is you have to have insurance. You know, there's one part in the beginning of the book where somebody loses their surrogate and they're upset because they just got it and didn't get the insurance.
Yep.
And then the guy was upset because he worked in construction. And his surrogate was this really lean, muscly, good-looking guy. And in reality, he was, you know, just like an armchair quarterback. He was real heavy. He was, you could see, he took the elevator up to the first floor, you know, that kind of stuff. He goes, oh, I got a job in construction. How am I going to do that? Look at me, you know. And later, one of the cops lost his surrogate, and they said, don't worry, your insurance will cover it. And they were going to give him one of the police forces, you know, generic surrogates, and he just went on his own. And I guess that was illegal. The police have to use a surrogate.
Yeah, but it was very shocking, the idea of this guy walking out into the world.
On his own.
Himself, without his surrogate doing the work for him. So, yeah. And the story evolves from there, and it's very, very interesting.
Now, is it a one-shot? Is it just that one book, or does it continue?
It finishes, yeah. It's definitely ending.
This storyline wraps up. I don't know if he did anything else or not with the surrogates concept.
He could have if he wanted to, but he didn't need to. That's one thing I've brought this up at times. In American comics, it just goes on forever and ever. And when I say that, I buy some of them. I don't mind. But I always liked it when I'd read about, like in Japan, you know, some stories, they have a beginning, a middle, an end, and that's it. And if they do bring it back again for something, it's fine, but it's always a beginning, middle, and end. Whereas these, you know, the stuff we usually read, it just goes on forever and ever and ever. And which, I mean, again, that's how it is. But I did enjoy this. It's one solid story. And there's a lot of little things going on. Like, again, that cop, when he shows up at work, his partner says, hey, you know, you made a comment like you're in the buff. You're the, you know, it's you. He goes, oh, your hair's thinner. Gained a little weight. His surrogate looked just like him. But, you know, age, you know, age.
A little younger or something.
Yeah, it was like a younger version, younger, leaner version of himself.
Yeah. Not a lot younger, you know, younger, leaner, but just a bit.
I feel like on 30 Rock last night, Alec Baldwin was replaced by Billy Baldwin.
Yeah, I did watch that.
Did you see that one?
I don't know.
You're not a fan?
I watched it last night.
I've just never watched it.
Oh,
you know?
It's great. You ever watch that? 30 Rock?
No, I never watched it. No.
All right, go on.
No, but it was a lot of nuances. His relationship with his wife.
The relationship with the wife, the tie into everything that's going on.
And that reservation, the people on the reservation. It was just a lot of the story was really strong. It had all kinds of subtle things. It wasn't preachy, you know. I can't say enough about it.
I think a bottom line, an undertone in the whole storyline, though, was a commentary about America as a whole, how we really have become very much like this society, and we could become like this society very easily, where we don't get up and do things. And, you know, this entire society is basically, you know, disconnected themselves from personal attachments with other people, unless it's through these surrogates.
That's just right. Like, well, look at Facebook.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
So basically what you're talking about is like people in the lunchroom sitting at a table together looking down on their phones.
We're playing draw something.
Oh, please.
Oh, Lord.
I walk into the lunchroom and I see a table with Dallas and 9 other people sitting there. Every one of them will look down on their little phones punching buttons. And then I ate with them today. I'm like, my God, you people, turn the phones off.
No.
Look up. Look around. Live life.
The first half of lunch, we sit there, we eat, and we talk, and we BS, make fun of each other, you know, stuff that we do. And then the second half of lunch, we all pull out our phones, and we play draw something together. We all draw pictures
everywhere
for each other.
Everywhere I walk. Everywhere
really?
I walk at
work.
You're
sitting around in a group playing on your phones, but you're all playing together.
Well,
my wife and I are in opposite rooms of the house, but we're texting each other, so we're actually having conversations.
Oh, it's
nice.
They walk around the building with their heads down, with their phone in their hand.
I do not.
God, look up.
I only elaborated.
Dallas never does that, but most of the other people do.
I only elaborated on this story so we could
like
justify
those,
the surrogates
like
thing.
It's like glass birds, you know, where their heads are always going down into the glass.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. Everybody's walking around with their heads down.
Done.
You know, Rook, would you do me a favor? When I bring the book back, send it to Dallas. He needs to read this thing.
Don, have you seen My Generation lately?
Oh, God. Never mind our generation. How about the next one?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what we're talking about, though, that's not just, you know, the people in the United States. That's the world. Mobius did a story about that called Ardina. And it was the same, you know, it wasn't about the surrogates, but it was the same thing of how we're completely disconnected from everything. And how we're, the diet and everything else is two people that look fairly similar. They ended up on this planet, and they're starving. And, you know, all their food's gone off the ship, all their rations. And everywhere you look, there's fruit trees, you know, all kinds of stuff. And he's thinking about it, says, maybe we could just eat this. And they say, oh, you can't. And he says, well, the ancients used to eat it. I've read about it. He goes, yeah, but our bodies have changed. You know, they had rougher bodies that could process it. And he thought about it, so they picked up an apple off the ground, and he bit into it, and, you know, it was rotten. He's like, oh, you know. And then later he thought about it, because it was even worse, and he started thinking, the guy was a mechanic, and he said, you know, maybe if I just apply the logic I use fixing machines. And he said, they're growing on a tree. And he says, that one on the ground, you know, it looks different, it's brown. He says, maybe if I tried one on a tree, it'd be okay. So he did. He picked it and he ate it and said, oh, this is good. So then he took it over to his partner, who didn't look too much different from him. And finally the partner ate it and they started eating. And as the story progressed, he was turning more like a man and she was looking more like a woman. And then their hair started growing back. You know, she was a little disgusted with it at first. And everything changed. And everywhere they went, they kept looking at the different fruits and vegetables and stuff. And, you know, they were eating this stuff. And then it just went on and on and on. And then later they find a society on this planet. And it's even worse. They wear masks. They have these filters, you know, that they keep on the masks. And the whole society is built on it. I think that was in three or four different volumes of those epic things.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mobius went back to France, and that was the end of
well, I think,
translation.
And the beauty of a lot of Mobius's stories, and including and especially that one, is the fact that he takes these situations and these really far-out science fiction fantasy tales, and he puts them, like, he puts this morality spin on it, or he puts something in there, this commentary that is so close to home and so universal that everyone can relate to it. And I think that was something that he did really well.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's a very timeless story, too.
That's absolutely true.
Those are always the best stories to me, the ones that are very timeless in their telling. You know, something you can pick up that was written 20 years ago, 40 years, 50, 60, 100 years ago, and you read it and you go, this so applies. You know, those are the really, really amazing stories.
He passed away a few weeks back.
Yeah.
He was 73, right?
Yeah, that one, you know, I'll be honest with you, normally when people, famous people pass away, it never really gets me. You know, I remember when John Lennon died, I was a big Beatle fan, and everybody kept expecting me to freak out, and I didn't know him, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, people, you know, friends, family, that's different. But I got up one morning and read it on Facebook, and it really got me. I really loved his work, and I always loved reading about him.
I think he had such a deep inspiration on you. You know, he
absolutely
left a good mark.
And a lot of people on Facebook kept posting about him.
Yeah, there were a lot of posts that day.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of them.
Well, as a matter of fact, Fantagraphics, I guess at one point, they always had nice headlines when they had the magazine. But they were talking about, I guess after Alan Moore did that one post about Before Watchmen, you know, and they said, we'll start mourning Mobius again once Alan Moore apologizes to some other cartoonist I guess he bagged on. But yeah, everybody's been talking about it. That one really got me. I miss him. As a matter of fact, while we're on the subject, for you guys to look
Segway.
At, I brought some, come on. I brought some Mobius work.
Oh, sweet.
Nice.
We'll have to post a lot of good Mobius art, I think, on this episode. Oh, you'll have to let me borrow these again one day. I remember when I first started working at the Widget Factory, you let me borrow all these. They're so damn good.
Which one
you got there? Oh, yeah. Nothing more.
Yeah, there was nobody like him. I bought a bunch of French albums when I was in California, which is what those are. But, a lot of people look at these albums, and this one girl I worked with, she just said, these aren't the same artist. Yeah, it is. But he could just go from one style to the other and have a mastery of each one.
Well, we've talked about it before, but some of his earlier work, especially his Blueberry, was hyper-realistic or hyper-detailed.
And rough.
It was rough, but he had quite a coarse style and a very detailed style. And that evolved over time as he tried to simplify things to make them more universal and to make them more... To say more with less, basically,
right.
I think, which he does so well. I mean, just this image I'm looking at right now, he only draws, you know, this amazing picture with maybe a couple of lines, a couple scratches, and it just has so much more meaning and so powerful.
That's one thing he talked about was he was trying to get away from all the detail.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you can cover up a bad drawing with a lot of detail. I know some... Jaime Hernandez would do the same thing. He started stripping styles down. A lot of cartoonists as they get older, and some guys complain because some people do like all the detail. But what always amazed me when you watch the films of him and stuff is he didn't... Sometimes he'd do underdrawing, you know, rough underdrawings, but a lot of times he would just draw directly on paper. He already had it mapped out in his head, and it was just one single line, you know, line to line, and it was done almost like he was tracing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nobody like him, and I'm very happy that there's so much work, and I wish the newer work would come out.
He's left a huge body of work, and it's amazing.
Absolutely.
What he's done, and some of his stuff, like it's so dreamy and it's so surreal. Some of this is like my favorite, some of his style. And I mean, look at the images he's doing are just, they're so colorful, they're really out there.
Yep.
And it's detailed to an extent, but I mean, on some of these pictures, these characters, they have two dots and a line for eyes and nose, you know?
Is that this page is almost identical from that book.
Oh, yeah.
Except for this picture and that picture.
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Well, the blueberry stuff too is a Western, so I would think you would use a different style for like a Western maybe than
absolutely
the sci-fi.
He started out; he was a Western artist. Yeah. That's how he made his living, and he started getting more. He always liked the science fiction work, and he started playing around with it on his own. And then basically, when that magazine Pilot was out, that's when he started looking at it, thinking, let's play around. But he was afraid he'd alienate all of his, you know, follower, you know, his audience on the Western Strip. So that's when he got the pen name Mobius, and he was doing all those experimental stories. And in a few years, Mobius is far more famous than he was as John Giroux.
It's ironic.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, the blueberry's done more in an American, you know, artist Western.
Definitely
artist.
An American style or a Western style. I'd agree with you there. But just the ideas and the concepts and just the visual imagery that he came through with, it's amazing to see this stuff. You know, I mean, he's got quite the imagination.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely beautiful work. I mean, and truthfully, if you look at this style of work, some of his work, there's nobody out there that's doing this stuff, you know? And he's got such a style that you automatically look at it and you know it's his.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have that. You look at it and you know it's theirs. But you look at this and you go, oh, yeah, that's definitely... Nobody's even trying to come close to this, you know?
Right. Let me interrupt you just real quick. Did he color his own stuff or did he have different people do colors?
I never knew that. I always thought... He colored it. I think basically he's given guides. I couldn't tell you. I do know he felt strongly about the lettering. You know, being English speaking, I never really got to see his lettering. But when he did that Silver Surfer comic for Marvel, he did letter it.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was online. It had a thing about his lettering. And he said the lettering is part of the story. It's part of the feel. So he felt, you know, very strong about lettering the piece.
Well, he was kind of a chameleon artist, too. Like, his style changed. I mean, you could tell his drawings, but the styles were constantly changing.
They were. I love that page there, the spaceship. Is what Rook said. You could always tell it was him, but, I mean, you could tell all seven different styles it was him. There was something about what it was. He also, with technology, he drew on a Wacom tablet.
Really?
Yeah, that's... I don't know when he started doing it, but they were showing it online. I heard people say he was doing that. But, you know, he was 73. I remember we were switching to desktop. I had a guy in his late 40s that he couldn't learn it. Every time I kept trying to, you know, get somebody to show him, he just refused. And I told him, look, this is where everything's going. And he says, you got to get it. Well, I'm not doing it. I said, well, you know, if you don't, you're going to be out of a job.
Yeah.
And he said... Well, you'll see. When you're my age, you'll see. It's hard to learn when you get older.
That's a load of crap.
Well, it was a load of crap. He's, you know.
That's a cop out right there.
But, you know, you look at other people and they just never stop picking it up.
Yeah. Well, especially in an industry like design, you have to continuously learn.
Oh, it's always changing.
Oh, yeah.
It's never the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just by its nature, that's what the industry is like. Okay, it's 3PO.
Yeah, I saw one of those in
actually,
the book.
Actually, you were saying that, you know, a lot of detail can cover up a bad drawing.
Yeah.
Lately, I've been working in, like, doing a lot of stuff with heavy shadow, so that can cover up a bad drawing, too.
Well, you know,
finding that out.
Yeah.
I will say this. The one I'm told is a lot of detail can cover up a bad drawing, but... I've never been able to cover up a bad drawing with detail, so there's an art to that, too.
I'm totally with Al on the shadow thing, because I tell you what, heavy shadows can cover up a bad model doing a photo shoot.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, let me tell you something. Girl walks in, do a shoot, and she's looking busted. I'm thinking to myself, let me move the light over here.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all learned that from... that episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah, Seinfeld.
Where Jerry Seinfeld has a girlfriend and she looked great sometimes, but then when she was in a certain light, she looked terrible.
Yeah, it was a certain angle, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, black light beauties.
Yeah,
well,
nice.
You know, I never knew anything about
that's going into the show notes.
But it was in a photography magazine I read in like 1978, and they had a picture of this woman. She was a model, and it just had a basically a snapshot of her. And her face was kind of broad and a little flat, you know, or she had bags under her eyes. You know, she was out clubbing the night before. Mm-hmm. And the editor was saying basically her look was kind of plain. I mean, she was good looking, you know, but she wasn't like a supermodel or anything. And they said that was before makeup and coffee. And then they said the next seven shots were taken with a, you know, they mentioned all the camera equipment and all that. And they had different, you know, seven different shots, and she looked like seven different women. And I'll tell you why, they were just unbelievable. And you can see it was the same lady, but she was just unbelievably attractive. They had them night shots, you know, day shots, different places. But I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, the makeup and lighting, I was shocked to see what you could do with it.
Well, as far as comic book artists, people like Toth and that was all lighting. That was all design and lighting.
Right.
Al Williamson, even, I would say.
Al Williamson, yeah.
A lot of the heavy inking guys.
The heavy inking guys, they were just doing it kind of like the forms were developed through heavy lighting, and then you'd have a little bit of detail here and there. A lot of the guys in those Brubaker books, Sean Phillips. And,
oh, yeah, doing Criminal. Yeah. That's a lot. They work a lot with lighting. And Mignola.
J.H. Williams III does
the same. J.H. Williams III. Mike Mignola, I would say, works a lot with lighting.
Oh, yeah.
High contrast.
Yeah. High contrast, yeah.
I mean, yeah, but that's almost an art style in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
That's not so much hiding bad art in that instance.
In my case, it is hiding bad art.
Yeah, well.
Well, guys, we're going to pause for a music break, and we're gonna listen to some In the Dim. But right before we get into that, I want to give you a little teaser so you don't leave during the middle of the song. We got a pretty good story. Don L and I went on a little excursion today to a few different comic shops, and... Al had front row seats to me, almost dying. You'll have to hear about that after the music break. This is In the Dim. This is my band. This is actually half of the band. This is me on an acoustic guitar and my singer. And just kind of playing around, I thought I'd throw this on here. It's you know, it's a live ditty. It's a song that we usually play with a full band, so it's not... It's not acoustic ready. Yeah, it's unplugged. So enjoy, guys.
Relationships, I'm a tired whore. You rubbed till I was run sore. You took more than I can afford. So now I'll just leave. That's a tour.
I just asked if the guys are ready. Welcome back, folks. And Don's down on his knees like picking up all these books. Do I look ready?
Yeah, Don's on his knees going, don't I look ready?
That song was called The Art of Subtlety. We should be touring soon. And when I say touring, I mean playing a couple local venues, so I'll let you guys know. But it'll be the full band. It won't be me and the singer.
Yeah, I would like to hear it with the whole band, because the band was quite good. I got to see them that one night.
Yeah, they're a lot better as a full band.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, did you see my new axe?
My new
guitar? Did you see that
all
thing?
All I see is you reach into your pocket. I'm like, do I want to see this?
Yeah, no, I'm sitting there, you know.
I stand up and I zip. Hey, you want to see something? No, no, this is good radio right here. Oh, this is my new baby.
Oh, yeah, this is exactly what you want to do on radio, show people.
I'm showing off my new guitar.
That's what I did last time with the tattoo.
I know. Okay, folks, I promised a good story, and it's actually not that good. I probably said the best part about it before the song. But so today, on the way over to Rook's house here, we're recording at Rook's house tonight. Don, Al, and I came straight from the widget factory. We all work together. And we just headed northbound. We stopped at 3 comic book shops, and we stopped at Taco Bell to eat. Our first stop was Wonder Water Comics, which is in Clearwater, Florida. So we get up there, and now, about 10 years ago, I worked at Wonder Water. I'm not a big fan.
We talked about it last episode.
Yeah. I like, they're okay, but I don't think I got along with the owners very well. I don't know if they were the biggest fans of me. So I was kind of hoping they wouldn't recognize me.
And if you were ever hoping to, you
and they
just
didn't.
I know.
Well, they
didn't,
but the thing was, the woman was talking, because Al made a comment about, or one of them, Dallas or Al, said something about they had it, but they got rid of it, and now it's real expensive. And the woman behind the counter is like, oh, that's always a mistake. And and then, you know,
they don't like Don either.
And we kind of laughed about it. And later, she brought something else up. And then we got to talking, and I said something about, yeah, Wonder Water. Yeah, that's us. And I said, okay, I've got to know. How did you end up selling water in comic books? I've always wondered.
The greatest combination in the world, water and paper.
She started explaining, and she laughed about it, and then she told me the whole story. It makes sense. Basically, they were her family set up the business to sell water. Mm-hmm. And there was another family that came in. They had some other type of business. They got a certain amount of space. They were subleasing it to them. And they set it up, and then they took off without paying or anything, and they were stuck with all this space, and they weren't making enough money selling. I think she said something, they had 1,500 gallons of water.
Oh, my
they
gosh.
They sold for like a quarter a shot.
Yeah. Well, when I worked there, yeah, people would come in and just get it for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's water. It shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't cost any money in the first place, I guess.
Imagine walking out of your house with a bunch of jugs of water. Hey, where are you going? Oh, I'm going to the comic book shop.
People. Yeah. I'm going to fuck some shit up.
But she said basically her husband was, you know, into sports memorabilia, the sports card and all that, and her son was into comic books. So she said that's what they did, was set the thing up. And the thing that kind of got me was she said at the very beginning, I guess this was in the late 80s, you know, but she said she was really anxious and scared because I guess the distributor, when they set them up, they had to buy $600 a month, you know, of merchandise. And she was sitting there thinking, oh, God, how are we going to do this?
You know? For a business just starting up and having all the overhead on top of it.
And then later she made a comment about, there's no way anybody can do that now, so I don't know what the numbers would be at this point. But then she's talking about when they had those five stores, she was talking about how much they ordered, and it was far beyond $600 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, but anyway, that's where you end up selling water and comic books.
It's an interesting combination.
Well, there's a store in Pinellas Park, or Largo. It was over by the karate school. It opened up...
Oh, Comics and Critters.
Yeah, Comics and Critters. I mean, like I
were
said...
Were they selling, like, hamsters and stuff?
It was an animal... It was a pet store. When you're done
with your comic, you can line your birdcage with it.
Yeah.
Well, it was, because, like I said, all of a sudden, all these comic places started appearing. And there was another one called Comic Castle, and it turned into Red Cape, and then it went out of business. And just across the street was Comics and Critters. Comics and Critters. So my daughter and I went in there, and it was a full pet store. Sold snakes, fish, birds, you know, hamsters, guinea pigs, all the pet supplies. And then right by the register, they had a little shelf with comics, and they had a couple of smaller shelves. They had the Darwin Cook, new Frontier action figures, you know. And all I kept thinking was paper and animals. And your comics are going to smell like a pet store when you take them home.
No, and they had Silver Age books in the backs, and then on the other side they had gaming people, so it's like...
Oh, they got bigger then.
Yeah, it got bigger, yeah. It was just
but it was there. I don't think it's there anymore.
No,
it must have been there for
years. What, you mean that idea didn't last?
Well, it was a full service... Basically, it was a full service pet store, but I guess the guy must have liked comics and sold some, but...
Yeah.
Here we go again, you know.
Hey, but you know, I do have to say something. I've never liked root beer before in my life, but you know, this A&W is pretty good. I just wanted to say that.
Well, I gotta say, I've never been a fan of A&W, but since I'm drinking it out of one of Rook's awesome Tullamore Dew blended Irish whiskey glasses, it tastes that much better.
Turn it around, take a look at the back of the glass.
It's a Dew bomb.
Yep.
Oh, like an Irish car bomb?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Irish car bombs made with Tullamore Dew instead of Jameson.
Oh, that's what I'm talking. This stuff is good. If you guys haven't had Tullamore Dew and you're Scotch whiskey drinkers.
Now, speaking of glasses.
I said Scotch, but it's
like
Irish whiskey.
Guy.
Sorry.
Irish.
Yeah, I know.
This is like old guy
you were about
stuff.
To get hit.
Do you remember
I know, sorry.
Years ago, used to get them at the Barefoot Mailman. They used to have these glasses that, you know, you bought them and they had a lady on them. And when you, like... And when you put ice in them, it melted.
Yeah.
The naked lady would come out.
Right.
It's like, I'm sorry. I'm like on a whole different level.
Well, speaking of ladies,
after we left,
we're getting ready to leave Wonderwater, and the whole time, of course, while Don's talking to one of the owners, I'm thinking, oh, Don, please don't say, oh, you know, my buddy Dallas used to work here.
I was getting ready to do that, too. I was just saying, well, you know, one of your employees is right here. And Dallas kind of disappeared, so I'm not going to do that.
By the way, I want to say, Wonderwater had a great collection of back issues, although they had almost every single issue of Promethea except the one that I need.
Now, Dallas, you didn't have to go in disguise with like a mustache and all that. I mean, we didn't leave
on really bad terms or anything, and they were nice enough people, you know what I mean? I'm sure everything would have been okay, but I just felt uneasy.
If we would have known that, I would just...
Well, they had a lot of stuff. So I did enjoy going through there.
Yeah, it was freaking huge.
Yeah. There's no water there, though.
You know, they don't sell anymore. She said it wasn't worth their while anymore.
Oh, okay.
So we left there, and we continued northbound on our way to the second comic shop. While we're driving there, probably just about a mile or two out from Underwater, there we're on US 19 headed northbound. Now, US 19 at this section is a four-lane highway heading north and then four lanes heading south. So we're heading north. We're not in the far right lane, but we're in the next one over. And we're just driving, and we're single file. Al's driving behind me. Don's in his car behind Al. So we're just driving, and a little old lady who could barely see over the steering wheel decides to pull out off a business off the side of the road, and there's no one in the lane next to me, so she should be okay. She decides to skip that lane and come straight into my lane, and for a couple seconds there, we're sharing my lane, and we're literally inches away from just hitting, and I'm thinking, oh God, here we go, and Al's got front row seats to see me get creamed.
I'm seeing your car like going like,
yeah, like I'm almost going into the guy to my left.
I was never aware of that.
Yeah, I didn't know it was an old lady. I thought it was some just like hot shot driver.
And then she continues to ride my ass, riding my butt the whole time. There.
What's funny is when you get out of the car, I saw him. Hey, how you doing? He's all happy and bouncy like nothing happened. That's
because I called Al on the phone. I'm like, hey, listen, this lady's a wild card, so you might want to watch out.
Yeah, right. And then she pulled into a Ford dealer. I guess she was getting rid of that car or whatever.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why she was going to the Ford dealer. She couldn't control the car.
Yeah, really. No, the problem was she couldn't even see over the steering wheel.
No, she was no.
So we continued on to Colossal Comics is the next place we went to.
Really? Wait a minute. You guys went to Colossal Comics.
Oh yeah, several. Dial and I have been here several times.
Yeah.
And I thought I liked you guys. Well, explain to me.
First, let me say my quick piece. I've never been a huge fan of Colossal Comics, although I've never had a problem with it. I've only been there twice, I think, maybe three times. But Rook, first off, what's wrong with it? Are they jerks? Or?
Well, go ahead and tell me your experience first.
Okay, go ahead. Well, I found out about it. Dallas is looking for certain back issues. And I remember you went over there. I think it was Promethea you were looking for. You stopped over, and you told me.
I'm always looking for Promethea.
Right, but you told me that they have $5 trades. What? So you gave me the address, and Al and I went up there. I found, I think I bought 400 or 500 bullet trades. I bought several, you know. I even bought a couple of trades of stuff I already have, you know. But Al and I went up there twice. I got a bunch of those. Got some quarter comics. You know, it was a whole treasure of it. And the guy wasn't friendly or anything.
Yeah, they definitely weren't that friendly when we went there.
Well, he just stares right past you, which, I mean, that's fine. Everybody's different. But $5 trades and quarter comic books, I mean, you know. So we went there twice, and we thought, let's stop there again. Came in. I walked in. He's talking to some guy, I think kind of arguing.
They were arguing.
I kind of nodded my head, and he just looked straight at me like, oh, okay. But again, I bought a book. You know, Al bought a couple of books. It was okay. So, okay, Rook?
Okay, well, here's my problem with Colossal. Years ago, when I got back into comics and started reading again, you have to understand, at that time, my hair was down to my ass. Okay. My goatee was halfway, you know, I had a long goatee.
You look like your dad.
I had a lot of piercings and everything, okay. I started out, I found Yancey Street, and I was like, oh, wow, this is a comic book shop right by my house. So I stopped in, talked to the guys, and I was like, you know what, maybe I will get back into comics. So I figure, all right, if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. You got to check out the other stores and see what you think. Now, mind you, as I stated, I did not look like the average comic book guy. You know, I walk in there, I ride up on my bike, on my Harley, and I have a leather vest on, jeans, you know, Harley t-shirt, all that. There's one way to piss me off and to never have me come in your business again. And that's to look past me and act like I'm not there. Because I walked in that place with over $100 of cash in my pocket. And I asked the guy, got any Ghost Rider back issues? He's like, oh yeah, they're all in the back. I was like, really? I was like, any chance I could get a look at them? He goes, no, they're in the back. I went, okay. Not even for cash then. And the guy just turned and looked away. Now, mind you, here's my other problems with this shop when I walk in. There is a flea-bitten, half-dead dog laying in the floor. And he's smoking a cigarette in the store.
Oh. Yeah. Well, haven't you ever heard of Comics and Critters?
So, you know, for him to obviously look at me and think, scumbag, and to be smoking a cigarette around comics, to have this flea-bitten dog that is trying to gnaw its rear end off because of its fleas, I just kind of went, huh, okay. Walked out the door, and I will never go back. Never.
Well, you know, the strange thing is, the first time Al and I went there, it's a kind of a strange building. It's on the side of the road. It's a narrow building. Mm-hmm. And there's like a budget rental place, yeah. You know, trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, while Al and I are in there, there's a business. There's a glass wall at the end of it on the side. And I was back there digging through these $5 trades. And there's a door there, but the door was closed. But I could hear everything these guys on the other side. They were fighting. Because they said something about, it was, I guess they rent equipment. It wasn't, I don't think it was the budget place, but it was like some kind of renting equipment, and they had to have the guy stay there because somebody was coming in a couple hours to take care of something. And it was a big fight, freaking out. The guy was whining, the guy was cursing, everything else, and it was like three guys in that place just freaking out and fighting like little kids. And I thought, well, this is strange. And come to find out, the door's kind of halfway propped open. We went in the next time, it's all open. I guess it's a combination heavy equipment rental business.
It is.
And so basically the theme of this whole show was
no one's
comic book combinations.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. And the theme of this this comic book store is no one's ever had a good experience
well,
there.
Well, he does. When you walk in, he looks right through you.
He did.
The second time Al and I went there, again, I bought some more of those $5 trades. I think you bought a Creature of the Black Lagoon figure.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And when Al bought that, the guy opened up and started talking, and we got to listen to 30 minutes of bashing the Green Lantern movie.
Yep,
so you would have enjoyed that, right?
Yeah, yeah. You would have hated that.
And I sat there and told him, well, I saw it. I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't buy it, but a friend of mine lent it. I had a good time. And then he just went on and on and on and on and on and just went, you know, I thought, okay. So when I came in this time, hey, how you doing? Look right through me. Okay, well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm used to going to comic stores and the people not really being very friendly or having social skills, so.
Well, as a clear polar opposite of that, however, our last stop was Yancey Street Comics.
Good job.
Yeah,
in
Gulfview Square Mall. And I definitely think that was the most pleasant experience for me, at least, because
I love
the place. It's well lit compared to the other two. It's nice and clean. And your boy was there working. I don't know the name of the owners.
Steve.
I guess it's Steve, yeah.
Yep.
A really, really cool guy, always has been. I don't know if he really knows me. But I went up and said hi to him, and I had a question. I was looking for one book. I said, you know, I've been looking for this, the last issue of Uncanny. I was just over in your rack. I didn't see it there. I was just wondering maybe you had it. So he actually got out from behind the desk, walked over there with me, and he sat there and looked through that entire section with me, you know, trying to find it for me.
Yeah.
Really cool, and he's always been a cool guy like that, and it's nice. That's the kind of service you expect from a shop, you know? And it's nice to have that. And another thing he said is, and I'm sure you probably noticed by now, is this weekend they're moving.
Yes, actually. I have been harassed a few times today by various people about the fact that I won't be there to help them. one of my friends is actually, well, we all know him from what little he talked on the show last appearance. Hash Browns is going to be helping them probably move on.
Hey, Hash Brown!
Hash Brown!
Yeah, yep. Woo! Give it up! Hash Brown, where are you? You should have been on this episode, you son of a gun.
He's helping him move, man.
Hey, no. Is it Hash Brown or Hash Browns?
Hash Browns.
Oh, okay. I think we put singular on the show notes
that's
the last
what I've
episode.
Been saying.
Ah, that's all right.
Whoops.
You I don't get upset.
You all right with that, Hash Browns?
He's all right, Hash Cakes? Tonight because he's working on a very horrible Russian accent. I don't even know. I spoke to him before the show, and yeah, I'm really not sure what happened. And yes, Yancey Street is moving. They're just moving to the other side of the mall.
That's right.
So
into a bigger area, though.
Yes, a much bigger area.
From what Steve says, it's about twice the size.
They're going to be near the entrance still.
Oh, okay.
But this is the busier entrance. Yeah. There's going to be more traffic. They're going to have a more visual presence in the mall. So
that's very nice. Yeah, I think that's good for them. It's good, and especially because they're doing it before new Free Comic Day. Mm-hmm. So Free Comic Day, of course, they're going to have a huge gala event, and it's going to be great, like they do every year.
Oh, yes.
And that's going to bring in a lot of people just passing by and walking by.
Yeah.
You know, sure, it's done that in years past at this mall, but they were
right there, like right at the entrance.
Yeah, and the thing is, the side of the mall they're currently on, before they've moved now, it's no one ever goes through there. It's like a ghost town.
Down that end. The end they're going to be at now, they're not going to be right there at the entrance. They're going to be in more, so they're going to have a bigger presence around. It's going to be nice, though, because, like you said, Free Comic Book Day, you know, and I'm sure we're going to scare the hell out of people in the mall because of all the lunatics dressed up in costumes.
Oh, I'm sure.
Should we address the Yancey convention? Because we did talk about that on...
I cut them out. I edited all that stuff out of the old episodes.
Okay, edit that comment out, too.
But, folks, in case I don't edit this comment out, because in case I'm lazy, Yancey was going to have a convention, but
yes,
they postponed it for indefinitely, so we'll get back to it.
Yeah. Just concentrate on Free Comic Book Day, everybody. That's gonna be the real shindig.
Hell yeah. There we go. Screeching halt. All right, well, here we go. Guys, let's talk about some comics we've been reading lately, if any. I myself have been going back and reading some of my old Claremont and Dave Cockrum Uncanny X-Men. Like I said, I might have said this on the last episode, and I've gotten through about the first 10 issues of their initial run. God, I forgot how much fun they had on that. And so much characterization just poured into every panel of that book, you know? And it's fun reading books from the 70s and before, of course, because they're so dense compared to the books that you will read now.
You're
getting so much action, so much story, so much happens in one comic book, in one 22-page book, that, you know, you don't see that in a book now. You know, it's decompressed.
I have a question, because I've been reading some newer books. Don't you have thought balloons anymore in the comics?
No captions, no thought balloons. Yeah,
wow.
None of that business.
I miss those.
Oh, I do, too.
Somebody must still do them.
I don't think so.
I do.
I can't think of anybody that does thought balloons or captions anymore. And very rarely do you see something get referenced, and you get the little caption.
The asterisk
from issue.
By the...
I missed that.
No, Stan Sakai, that does Usagi Jimbo, he still does the thought bubbles.
I'm sure there are some guys, but as far as the big two or even...
Mainstream
books, you
know the big one with that was when Frank Miller did Daredevil. He never put thought bubbles and stuff. He was trying to show, like, if you were a film. You know, it was the big thing, the cinema photography. And it was amazing. You know, I mean, I thought, wow, is that something? And I know a lot of people were trying not to do that anymore. And I guess it just became a mandate. But, you know, it was neat. But, yeah, I don't want everybody doing it.
Well, comics overall has become more cinema.
Yeah.
Cinemagraphic. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's the right word or if even that is a word.
It's a good one, though.
Hey, it works.
Cinematic.
Well, Alan Moore.
Cinematic. Thank you. That's the word I should say.
I guess he didn't do that in Watchmen either. They didn't. Did they show thought bubbles?
Now, why don't you go pull up those Miracle Man, somebody, and see if there's any thought bubbles in those.
I think in Watchmen, he had thought bubbles.
I don't know Watchmen, but Miracle Man.
Yeah.
No, Watchmen didn't have any, I'm pretty sure.
See, I think that was the other one that did it.
I don't think V for Vendetta did either.
Well, what was funny was I had an English teacher in ninth grade English. She was talking about books, you know, and how that's one thing books have over television, you know, movies, is you can hear the character's thoughts. You know, I mean, they'll tell you what's happening later, you know, hear conversations, and then you'll hear, you know, the character's thoughts, thinking about things. And she said that's one thing superior. And then she did bring up soap operas.
Mm-hmm.
The soap operas, you know, the characters, you hear their thoughts.
Yeah.
It was always kind of echoey when they would do it.
Yeah.
Well, she's saying that, I thought, well, you know, they do that in comic books all the time. Of course, you could say that in the 70s. I guess you can't say it too much now.
Things are different. So Rook pulled out Watchmen from his collection. He's looking freaking high and low for Thought Bubble, but I you're not going to find
them. I am looking, and, you know, I was almost certain that there were Thought Bubbles in the whole series with Dr. Manhattan on Mars when he's by himself reviewing his life.
Well, he is talking about it.
He narrates it.
Narrates it in caption. He doesn't... Right. I thought it was Thought Bubbles that they had in there, but no, it's not. Well, it's caption narrated.
Frank Miller did that in Dark Knight, where Batman was talking to himself, but it was always, you know, the square caption boxes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see that.
He was definitely a forerunner for that, the current style.
Right.
You know?
It's a lost art, which I will be bringing back one day.
And we're all patiently holding our breath.
Yeah,
on
just
that
Thought
one.
Balloons the whole book.
Thought Balloons. Well, a Thought Balloon thinking about another Thought Balloon.
Yeah, I don't mind it sometimes. It's nice, you know. You don't want everybody to be the same.
It's all going to be.
What's
like
up, Mel?
Just thinking.
Oh, hello.
That's good for radio. Hi, how are you doing?
It's Mrs. Roy.
Wife just got home.
In case everybody's wondering what's going on, my wife just came home.
Everybody say, hey, Mel.
Hi. Hey, Mel. Okay, now get out of my house.
She comes home to a house full of nerds. Oh, great.
There you go.
I'm sure you're loving it right now. So, Don, you and I both read actually a really good book recently. You let me borrow it, and that was the 1969 League.
Yeah, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start it off. I've never been a big fan of it. Somebody had the first trade, and I read it. I mean, it was good, but I just wasn't huge of it. And then what was it, 1910, or was it 1810?
1910, because it's the whole thematic element is it's a century.
Right. Well, I bought that. You know, I read it, and it was fine. Yeah, you know, this is okay. There was things about it I liked, but I just wasn't anything that really grabbed me. And then I saw this 1969 come out. I love the 60s. I grew up in the 60s. I didn't really care for the cover too much. I never really bothered buying it. Well, at MegaCon we just went to, I found it in a back issue bin. So I picked it up, took it home, and started reading it, and I couldn't put it down. It's one of the best books I thought I ever read.
You know, it's a pretty hefty book. It's deceiving, too. It's about 100 pages, and it looks like it's going to be about a 30-40-page book.
It says a lot. And
yeah.
The thing that amazes me, it's all stuff that was going on during those times. And I never thought of it that way. You know, he's always talking about the summer of love and, you know, how everything happened. And I just remember all those things. I remember how everything was and the colors they used. And then, you know, at the end of the book, an event happens and then everything changes and shows how life went on. And, I mean, you know, it's kind of exaggerated a bit, but, God, that's how does he come up with this stuff? It's fantastic. Now I want to go back and get the first trade myself and read all these books in sequence. But now I have to say I've become a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen fan, but I never disliked the series. It was just kind of indifferent to me.
I think I may have a trade for League on the shelf over there.
Yeah.
If you're interested, we'll have to take a look.
Cool.
See which one it is, if it falls into the series that you're reading.
Right. Cool. Well, it all builds on. What was your thought?
Well, let me read it. And Alan Moore is nothing if he's not a good storyteller. I mean, he's a very intelligent man, and he culls from different aspects of existence and perception. But he can tell one hell of a story.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the strength of the League, all of the League books that I've read, is they're really good yarns. They're really good detective stories. From start to finish, one good, clean detective story is basically what it boils down to, and I think. This one kind of encapsulated all of that. It really did. When I first started reading it, it was a bit overwhelming. Once I got to know who the players were, I got really involved, and then, hell, I couldn't put that book down. You know, I read it all in two sittings. You know, the first sitting was only a few pages, but the second time I picked it up, I just couldn't put it down. I finished it off. It was good. Definitely not my favorite out of the League or out of Alan Moore stuff.
Really?
But it was fun. It really was, like I said, it was just a great, solid story. The characters didn't really stick out to me. The only one that really had a voice, really, that I could differentiate from everyone else would be Mina, you know, the main heroine. Those other guys, you know, Orlando and King Solomon's Mine guy, whatever his name is. They didn't really have much of a personality in this one. Now, he had a huge personality in the first League hardcover. I didn't see it in this one.
Alan Quartermain.
Thank you, Alan Quartermain. That's right. Thank you. But it was good. Now, as far as the art, it was
Kevin O'Neill, right?
Thank you. It was Kevin O'Neill, who I love. He's very stylized.
Now, you're here just I
know. Seriously.
It's
thanks
like
a lot.
A rapper. Dallas will say something. Al says one word or two words
goes,
right behind
him. Is that Kevin O'Neill? He goes, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Biff. Kevin O'Neill, he's fantastic. He's a very stylized artist, and I do like his art. This one was much more...
Shorthand,
almost avant-garde to an extent, compared to the earlier League stuff, which is definitely in his style, but it's more coherent, I would say. The earlier stuff's more coherent, and here he's just so fluid and so into it. It kind of flows along with the story, though, because there's areas where psychedelics are taken, and you've got to have that feeling in the book. And, you know, he conveys that. He's good at that. See, it was good. It was good. I liked it.
He's taken a lot of psychedelics.
Oh, God, yeah.
But I liked it. It was good. If it was by, and I don't mean to be harsh on it, if it was by any other writer, I would have been blown away.
Well, it was. there was some things about it. One thing, everything Dallas said about Alan Moore, I completely agree with. But one thing that always throws me is little things he sees and how he puts them in. He can tell complex things very simply, and in this one, one is the Victorian feelings of people. You know, Mina, I guess she was bitten by Dracula, and she's immortal.
Yes, that's why she has the scarf on, because she has right. Dracula's bite marks all over her neck.
But that was something, you know, in the 60s, she's walking around, and everybody's all wild and all that, and she's trying really hard not to be a prim, stuffy Victorian
She's trying
lady.
To be current.
And kind of failing miserably. And they show that, I guess, the main catalyst, the bad guy in the strip, is showing him dying with, you know, these Victorian women and this one man, and how these women are. And then in this one page, at the very end of the page, it shows, you know, what happens in these women's reaction. Very uncomfortable, very... Well, then later it shows the woman in the 60s, completely different. You know, same woman, completely different. I was shocked. And, you know, the way Kevin O'Neill drew it, you know, it was real simple stuff, but it conveyed all that. So that's one thing I always enjoyed about this book here. The other ones, maybe I just didn't read it that close, but I didn't see any of that in the other ones. So you like the first one the best?
I do like the first one. This one, for what it's worth, it's a bit deeper than the first one, I would say. The first one is, to an extent, pretty surface level. It's a really good, like I said, straightforward story, and I liked it. And, of course, it's got its subtle tones. It's got its homages to many different things. But and this one, the new one, the 1969, is much more involved, I think, than the original League. But I think that was the first League's charm, was it was just a really fun, in-your-face adventure. So, you know.
What about the movie?
Yeah.
Well, you have the movie.
I've never seen the movie, no.
You've never seen it?
No.
I saw it. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's about all I can say for it, too.
Somebody, but. I guess maybe Melody.
Didn't Sean Connery swear off the film industry after making that movie?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm serious.
Really? Yeah,
I think that was his last film he ever
movie.
Did. His experience of the director and producer,
I think so, yeah.
Well, some...
Well, probably that and Alan Moore probably, like,
put a curse on.
Yeah. Well, I think Alan Moore was all for it at first, and that was his last experience with Hollywood. Oh. You know, once that went sour, and he turned his back on Hollywood, just like Sean Connery.
Well,
did.
I was shocked because all of a sudden everything he wrote was a movie. From Hell was a movie.
He didn't have any involvement in those movies.
Right.
From Hell he probably did, because that was his. That wasn't owned by DC.
Oh, really?
But V for Vendetta and Watchmen,
he didn't have any say
in that.
I don't think he was happy with any of those films.
No, he wasn't.
But
I don't think Alan Moore has ever once said he was happy about any of his books, any of his stories becoming movies. Ever.
Right. Well, he was not, but I just remember, I'm like, wow, they're making movies out of his stories? That's something. And I remember seeing at the theater all these big banners for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I says, really? And then a friend of ours at work, she had the trades. That's where I read that first trade, and then she bought the movie, so she lent it to me. I watched it at home. It kind of went in one eye and out the other. and Tom Sawyer was in it. Yeah,
I heard about that.
I didn't really quite understand what that was about.
That's right. He was not in the book.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It, you know.
Well, guys, I have, since I'm the host, I guess it's my duty to cut everybody off. So I think this would be a good time to end the episode.
Well, Al didn't talk about what he's reading.
Al's going to have the entire next episode.
It's all about me.
I'm just kidding. Go, Al. Okay. I'm sorry.
Actually, I read a couple of books, but I kind of want you guys to read the one, see how we feel about it. It was called Unstable Molecules. It's basically, the basic idea of it is that the Fantastic Four were actually four real people, and they lived in Jack Kirby's and Stan Lee's neighborhood. And they based the Fantastic Four on these four, you know, people that they knew. The Reed Richards was a nerdy scientist. Sue Storm was kind of like a frustrated woman. You know, Johnny was like a, you know, crazy guy.
Wait, is this a comic or a novel?
It's a comic book. It came out, like, I forgot. It was Guy Davis drawing it, and I think the guy's name was James Stern, who wrote it. And it's set in the early 60s, and that's the basic idea. I thought it was very good, but I want to bring it in and loan it to you guys. And
yes, so
yeah,
that would
be awesome.
And I read, and
what
ready?
Else are you, yeah, go.
Ready? Ready?
Wait, drum roll, right?
I read 20 issues of The Walking Dead.
Oh my
what?
God, Al. Are you Whoa. Serious?
I'm serious. I wanted to know how the story
this,
was going to go.
This is definitely
like
an event.
The first 20 years?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, what do you think?
Go.
Yeah, excellent, yeah. I wanted to see the differences between the show and the comic book, and I stopped right at the point, right at the jail. The last series ends at the jail. I read a whole thing.
Yeah, that's the first hardcover. Right.
The book's a little bit more wicked than the,
yes.
the show is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if I remember, more people die in the book quicker, right?
Yeah.
So many people have died in the book that you just eventually forget their names. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you just eventually forget that they even existed in some way. So.
But I found like a good run of them.
So what did you what do you like better?
Different. I like the show because it's more visceral. The zombies are a little more like, you know, in your face. But the book has a lot more going on, you know, obviously because they can, you know. I mean, it's only an hour show.
Yeah, and the comic's got a bigger budget.
It seems like they're condensing story. Yeah, right. It seems like they're condensing storylines in the show, kind of like to move faster. And the barn isn't in the comic book, is it? Herschel and all
yes,
that?
Yes, the barn is in the comic.
It must have gone by real quick then, because I don't remember.
Yeah, Herschel's farm really doesn't last that long in the book.
Okay, that's what I thought, yeah.
No.
Did not know that.
Yeah, there is the whole walkers in the barn in the book. I can't recall how they get discovered. But yes, they are in the book as well. They get discovered because Herschel basically tells Rick right to his face, you know, well, where do you keep your dead? Well, we keep ours in the barn.
Okay, all right.
So it wasn't as big a reveal as it was on the show.
No, I don't recall it being that big of a reveal, you know. And, of course, Shane wasn't there to, you know, break open the barn.
No, he was gone quickly.
You know. Speaking of Shane, guys, now that season two is over, how's everybody feel about it?
Yeah. Well, the episode before that.
The death of Shane?
Yeah, it was a good episode, but until...
Spoilers.
At the very end of it, yeah. At the very end of it, it was a slow-moving episode. Not really too much was happening until at the very end. I enjoyed it. But this last one, my God, it was like... As a matter of fact, I was on Facebook while I was watching. I kept reading Rook's post.
Yeah.
You know,
one down.
Nice.
It was like watching the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you just watch Otis's wife get ripped right out of that out of Herschel's daughter's hand.
Yeah.
And there was so much content packed into just the first half of that episode.
Oh, yeah.
By the time they left that flaming farm, I thought the episode was over. I could have sworn that was an entire hour gone by, and I'm like, wow, we're only a half hour into the show. It was great.
Yeah. It was very interesting. I found the death of Shane episode to be fantastic imagery of the two of them on that hill arguing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was just a beautiful image right there.
It was a great setup.
You know, I don't know. I've had conversations with some other people, and, you know, I've heard some people have called it a cop-out the way that they had that the way Shane died comparatively to the comic book, but I encourage people to remember, Kirkman has always said that the show will not be the book. The same thing is not going to happen on the show that it did in the book. It's going to be different. These are not the same characters. These are the same names, some of the same backgrounds, but they will evolve differently.
I think that's what's so cool about the show, especially to people that read the comic, is it's a different entity. It's got the same name, it's got the same characters, like you said, but they're not the same characters.
And I'm not sure that what he was saying about it's in the air and everybody has it in them to become a zombie is going to come true.
It is.
It has.
You saw it happen with Shane.
Well, why didn't those two guys that were killed in the bar come back as walkers?
Shot them in the head.
Did he shoot them both in the head?
Shot them both in the head.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Rick's that much of a badass. He just shot both of them right in the head.
Okay.
And the reason he shot them into the head is because he knew that if he didn't, they would come back.
Once again, it's those subtle little moments, especially overlooked moments like this, that you can go back and say, that's why he did it that way, because he knows.
Go back and rewatch the episode where they first tried to get rid of Randall, where they dropped him off and Shane's standing over the two bodies going, there's no bites, no scratches. Rick was very dismissive of that because Rick knew it's not the bites and the scratches.
And that scientist told him that?
The guy in the CDC on the last episode of the first season told him.
I never thought about that. Yeah, when you get bit, you're just going to die because they got you.
Yeah. When you get bit, you know you're going to turn. But what they're saying now is that you don't have to be bit. Go ahead, slit your wrists. You're coming back.
Yeah.
Die of natural causes.
It's crazy.
You're coming back. So, yeah.
Wow. It really is. It was refreshing, too, to see these last two or three episodes. So much happened. So many things change and evolve after having an overly stagnant season, for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, the season was very slow, but it was...
I don't mean that in a negative way, though.
Yeah, but you have to understand that this story is not, you know, it's not about the action, the zombies, the attack, you know. It is about these people. You know, this is a very dramatic series. You are learning about these people and the lengths they are willing to go to survive.
We've seen how all of these events have changed Rick as a person, too. I mean, look at him in just this season. Look at the kind of person he was at the beginning of season two. Now look at the kind of person he is at the end of season two. He's a broken man.
His basic attitude to everybody, and I think he even said it, he goes, you don't like it? There's the door. You know, this is what I'm going to do to survive. You guys can either join me or piss off. Pure and simple.
And T-Dog got more than one line in that episode.
I know. What? A whole season, and within, like, I don't know, a minute, he had more lines in one episode than he did all freaking season.
Yeah, that was... And Herschel just offing zombies left and right with that shotgun.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
I thought he was a goner. I really thought Herschel was gone.
I thought T-Dog was a goner, man. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you got one black dude on this show, and he doesn't say one line for five episodes.
There's one or two episodes he wasn't even in.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he wasn't, you know? I mean...
Poor guy. Or, huh? Yeah.
No, I really... You know, now that T-Dog survived, I really want to see them do something with this character. You know, he is not the token black guy of the show. Let's see some action here. Let's see what he is capable of, please.
You'll probably see some coming up.
I hope so.
Because in the book they had the Tyrese character and all that.
Exactly. You know, and I thought that T-Dog was the replacement of Tyrese, mm-hmm. which, you know, Tyrese's involvement in the group really isn't the same.
No.
You know, Tyrese came in after Shane and made that Shane replacement. But now with Daryl in the TV series, Daryl is there to make that replacement for Rick, I think.
Okay.
So, we'll see what happens.
So, has anybody else read anything? Rook?
I read the New Age of Apocalypse that Marvel just put out. have to say, even though I have not read all the lead-up
stuff... You see me cringe.
X-Force, I'm far more impressed with this idea of Age of Apocalypse than the last revisit to the Age of Apocalypse they did. The last revisit of Age of Apocalypse that they did was very kind of... almost coming along the lines of the regular Marvel Universe. You know, everything's hunky-dory kind of crap. And I was very impressed to see them actually come back to the Age of Apocalypse universe, and things are not okay. You know, things are still messed up. So,
well, you're letting me borrow this issue, Age of Apocalypse number one, and I wanted to see who wrote it, mm-hmm. because I thought, well, you know, maybe if it's Rick Remender who wrote Uncanny X-Force, it's going to be awesome. It's freaking David Latham.
Wow, okay. Who is?
He wrote Stray Bullets, and Young Romance, or one of those something romance. But it's David Latham. This guy is a phenomenal writer. I'm actually really excited about reading this now, and the art's pretty damn good, too.
Yeah.
The artist is Roberto De La Torre, whoever that is.
Yeah.
But he looks pretty good. He's no Jerome Pena, but he's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm very impressed with the fact that, you know, they brought Age of Apocalypse back, and it's not hunky-dory, you know, it's not Apocalypse in the background. No, things still suck in the Age of Apocalypse.
Nice.
Humans are cattle, and they're all dying, and now they're starting to genetically cull the mutants so that only the superior ones survive.
Well, that's Apocalypse's whole shtick, so yeah. I'm not surprised.
And actually, I just remembered going off on a tangent that we talked before. You were talking about how comics seem to be more cinematic now than they used to be. It's because I'm reading newer books, and I'm seeing these guys work online, and a lot of them are storyboard artists too. So they're doing storyboards.
Oh, there you go. So they have a background in that.
They have a background in it. Yeah,
it's not surprising.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the writer too. If you don't have a really strong writer, a lot falls onto the shoulders of the artist. You know. Where something like this with Age of Apocalypse, I mean, there's a lot of reading involved in this book.
Okay.
Because, for one, you know, they're trying to set you back into this universe, but for two, it's a damn good writer.
Yeah, and he's great at writing character pieces.
Yes.
That's what he does.
Yeah, and I really think we're going to see something, if not as good as the original Age, this is going to be right up there. It's going to belong on the shelf next to it. Not like the last revisit of Age of Apocalypse.
Okay, nice. Well, I'm going to let you know what I think about this when I take it home and read it this week.
Definitely.
Cool. Gentlemen, do we have anything else?
I think that's it.
New business? Same as the old business.
All right, well, ladies and gents, thank you so much for listening to us, and thank you for supporting us for 25 whole episodes. We're very excited to have gotten this far. We have some very exciting news we're not going to announce yet, but we have some really really big things happening very soon. So in the next upcoming episode or so, we'll be letting you in on that. So please stay tuned. Keep on checking the blog. If you didn't find us at the blog, which you probably did, but the blog is twodimensionpodcast.blogspot.com. And you can go on there. You can listen to all of our episodes. Don always puts up links to the show and to the show notes. There's links about people, comics that we talked about, so you can see them. You can read more about them. There's also some other links in the side, so you can have some further reading. You can check out my webcomic, which there's a link on the Two Dimension blog, but you can find that at mightybluecomic.blogspot.com.
And don't forget to add us on Facebook as well.
Yes, please add us on Facebook. We'd love it. We always have some fun little tangents going on there.
And if you want to send them some money or anything like that, you can send
it. If you want to send us some comics, that
send
would be
some
even
comics,
cooler.
We'll review them for you.
Yeah, we'll review some awesome comics.
Yeah,
so
please.
Yeah, you should please do that. Because we don't have enough on our table.
All right. We won't fact check while we do it, though.
No fact checking involved in this show whatsoever.
And if
we're
you
like
send
Fox
us,
News.
If you send us comics with money, we'll sure to give you a good review.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. So stay tuned for the next episode. And until then, please take care of yourselves and read more comics.